I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. It may not feel like it, but spring is just around the corner. In fact, in a couple of weeks, we'll see the return of the first osprey. Today, it's Bird News with ornithologist Vernon Locks, author of Bird News, Vagrants and Visitors on a Peculiar Island. He writes columns for the Cape Cod Times and the Enquirer and Mirror, and he is the senior naturalist at the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket, which is where he joins us from this morning. Morning, Vern.
Good morning, Mindy.
Okay, we got to start with front page news today. On the front page of the Cape Cod Times, we've got, you know, the story of the snowy owls, and people are getting a little too close.
Well, you know, you can count on people to abuse a good thing sometimes, and most people have been very respectful of the owls, but there's always a few people that need to get close, want to get closer to take a picture. I mean, I've heard stories of people chasing owls in a few places with an iPhone and repeatedly flushing it, which is extremely bad news for the bird and for the person doing it. So my advice to anybody that wants to get a great picture of a snowy owl is buy yourself some very serious camera gear, get a really long lens, and shoot from a distance. The birds, you know, some of the birds have a different tolerance for humans than others, and some don't seem to mind closing, you know, approaching people closer, but other ones it's very disturbing. And basically, just respect the wildlife. And how you should be looking at these birds really is through a binoculars or a spotting scope, and watch them, observe them, look at their behavior. Snowy owls are fascinating because their eyes, they have binocular vision. Their eyes are surrounded by they can't move their eyes from side to side, which is why the owls are constantly turning their heads around. Up until this winter, it has been common knowledge or reported in all the literature that snowy owls can turn their heads around some 270 degrees.
Wow.
They have extra vertebrae. Well, on four different occasions this winter, I have been watching a snowy owl through my spotting scope or binoculars, having it look straight at me, and it will turn its head around completely, sort of like The Exorcist, and go a full 360 and look at me from there, and then turn its head all the way around. So I think all the literature is wrong. The birds can, in fact, turn their heads 360 degrees around.
Yeah.
Which is, I digress. I haven't seen this article in the paper.
Yeah. Oh, nice photos. And it's sort of the do's and don'ts, telling people what they should and shouldn't do. And we should mention,
do you want to summarize it for us quickly?
Basically what you're saying. Yeah, don't take a picture with an iPhone, because if you've got the iPhone, you're too close. You know, to keep your distance, bring binoculars. I don't have them in front of me. I can't remember all the things it said.
Well,
common sense stuff. But
you're not at the zoo. This is a wild animal that is trying to survive the winter, and every time you make it move or alter its behavior in any way,
you're causing it to use
extra energy and upsetting. You know, it's not a good idea.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, we should mention is we'll see a lot of birders out there with, like you, with the big scopes and things. And, you know, if you go up and say, hey, do you mind if I take a look? I don't think there's any birder that would say, no, get out of here. It's my scope. Birders are really friendly people. They will let you look through their scope and see that bird.
Don't tell anybody that, maybe. That's a big secret.
Well,
a big
secret. You do it all the time. I see you all the time saying, hey, come here, you want to take a look? So, yeah,
well,
so don't be afraid to ask.
It's important for people to don't realize what's right out in front of them. Right. I'm often placed, you know, I was out somewhere recently and a bunch of people were coming by and I said, hey, do you know what's out here? And they look at me like I said, no, come look at the telescope, you know, and they had no idea. They'd never seen it. And there were three snowy owls in view within a quarter of a mile away that in the telescope looked like you were, you know, right next to them.
Right.
So, that's great.
All right, so somebody brought me in the paper, the ones I missed. It says, don't get too close. If an owl changes its behavior, including preening, turning its head, or raising its stature, you are too close, back away. And don't chase it once it flies away. Don't feed the owls. Those were the other ones. So there you go. And there's some owl walks. That's a good, you know, so that's information in the paper today if you want to check that out. So for folks who don't know, we don't usually see this many owls. So what's going on?
Well, it's been a fascinating, what they call it, an eruption, not an eruption like a volcano, but basically it's a massive incursion of snowy owls that we have never seen the likes of before. Anyone that's listening, if you go to your computer, this is a quick aside, there's a Project Snowstorm or Project Snow, which is a great name because snowy owls, in fact, all birds in the world have what's a banding code. So people that catch and are doing research on birds, and the banding code usually is the first two, in fact, it's always the first two letters of the common name. So a snowy owl would be SN, it's all capitals, mm-hmm. OW for a snow. A ruddy turnstone, for example, would be a Rutu, an American Robin and Amro, Dunkin' Donuts, Dudos. So anyway, go Google Project Snow, and you'll see that a whole group of researchers and organizations all over Eastern North America have gotten together, and they've raised quite a bit of money, and they've put these new state-of-the-art satellite transmitters on some 19 owls so far. And unlike most satellite transmitters that have to go up and uplink with the satellites to send the data, these things send the data to cell phone towers. So it's much, they don't need as much energy. These are also solar powered battery packs on these transmitters. And we're getting, you can actually go onto this site and click on the maps, and there's a snowy owl that was banded that Norman Smith caught at Logan Airport, and it was brought down and released on the end of Sandy Neck. And that bird has been fascinating to watch what it's done. And then they released one on Duxbury Beach. There's several down in Delaware and New Jersey. Anyway, it's quite something to see. It shows you the altitude. It shows you the time. So what they're finding out is all these behaviors that were previously unknown on snowy owls, especially when they're coming south in the winter, that we're learning. And I could just go on and on and on. but what the big problem they did have, though, and they were afraid this might happen, is that because it was giving real-time data on exactly where the birds were to within a foot, that some photographers and some owls actually were abusing this privilege, mm-hmm. and there was a couple of instances where they went on the website, they found where the owls were, and they went and they basically chased them off.
Well, oh boy.
This was not good news. So now, if you'll notice when you go on the website and that all the data, you can only get it, is a week old.
Wow. Yes, we can't disturb.
We're giving the owls a free week.
There you go. Run.
So you can
fly. <that's right.
laughs> The one that was released on Sandy Neck, for example, flew up to Duxbury Beach, hunted a bit, came back down across the canal, back to Sandy Neck, hung around for a while hunting the Great Marsh. Then it came across to Hyannis. Then it made its way down the south side to Nobsca Point, went over to the Elizabeth Islands. And just a week ago, its most recent date, it crossed over to Martha's Vineyard over on the North Shore.
Huh.
So and you can see exactly, where, and it's fascinating.
Yeah. If you have questions
I'm sorry, you asked me something else, why are there so many owls?
Yeah.
It was assumed that snowy owls, they showed up when there was a real lack of food. Well, it turns out the Arctic is a huge place that runs, and snowy owls are whole Arctic, meaning they're found around the top of the planet. And because they live up there, it's such a harsh environment, and there are booms and busts, basically, for prey, for everything, and weather conditions. So the snowy owls, their main primary food resource when they're breeding is a small rodent called the brown lemming. It's like a nice, fat, furry vole. Pretty good size, though. And these things are very cyclic, and every 5 years, their populations, and they go up and down. Anyway, the owls wander around the Arctic looking for a place that is having a huge outbreak, basically, or at the top of the cycle of the brown lemmings. Well, this year, because there were so many, several researchers did research, talked to all the people that were working on owls. It was a terrible year in Greenland. Baffin Island didn't have any owls. The North Slope of Alaska. In fact, there were no owls. It was a really lousy breeding year, except straight north of us, some 2,200 miles, in northern Quebec, there's a peninsula called the Ungava Peninsula. You can find it on a map. It's up, and the lemmings were going crazy, while the owls came in from all over the place to breed. In fact, one of the researchers, a guy that works out in Calgary, sent a picture to a friend of mine, sent it to me, and shows, I've seen this actually on the news now, they show a picture of a snowy owl nest with four eggs in it, and ringing the outside of this relatively big nest on top of a high spot on the tundra are 70 brown lemmings.
Wow.
Stacked up like cordwood and a bunch of little and some ground squirrels, which is unbelievable. So The female owls, when there's this sort of superabundance, are capable of changing their behavior, and they're able to lay up to 14 eggs.
My goodness.
So the snowy owls came in from all over. They laid lots of eggs, and they raised a banner year, an incredible number of young. And then because young owls, young birds of prey everywhere, it's very difficult. In fact, most of them, including our local red-tailed hawks, northern heron, most raptors, about 50% don't make it through their first winter. And this would include, and this includes snowy owls as well. So the adult birds, anyway, it got cold, started getting dark, and there's really not much food. So the snowy owls came south in numbers that we'd never seen on the Avalon Peninsula up in Newfoundland. On the first weekend of December, they had over 300 snowy owls.
Amazing.
Which had never,
yeah,
anything like this ever been seen before.
Yes.
And they kept coming south in numbers that are just crazy. On Nantucket, we had 33 snowy owls on the Christmas. Anyway, people were seeing, this is the mother of all years to see snowy owls.
So now, will they be leaving soon?
Well, see, that's an interesting question that we really don't know the answer to, but there's some evidence that some of these transmitted birds are already starting to move north. But because they're all young birds, they are not going to head north and breed this year. In fact, snowy owls probably don't breed, although we're not even certain. Some might breed their second year. Most don't breed until they're three or four. So it's not like they have to go back north and establish a territory and defend stuff. So they will probably rather leisurely proceed back north.
We're not sure
when they're going to, because American oyster catchers and piping plovers, those birds start arriving back here. In fact, a couple of oyster catchers jumped the gun. There was one, which I'm sure they're sorry about at this point. But, you know, how are the snowy owls? Are they going to go after the oyster catchers?
Oh, no. You know, I love oyster catchers.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah.
In fact, they don't like ospreys, and snowy owls don't get along well at all.
Oh, boy.
And we've been seeing snowy owls on lots of osprey poles. And that could be, you know, great horned owls kill ospreys. Well, maybe snowy owls. This is a lot of stuff could happen here in a few weeks.
Wow. Yeah, because just in a couple of weeks, when do we usually start? It's like mid-March when we see the osprey return? What's the earliest
date? I always remember because my birthday is on St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
And in many years, I see my first osprey on my birthday. So, I mean, that's unbelievable. That was 2 weeks ago yesterday.
Wow.
So it would seem to me that it's quite clear that there's going to be snowy owls around here into April and maybe even to May.
Well, they won't stay through the summer, though, will they? I mean, it'd be too hot, right?
Yeah, I would think they. Well, we think they're going to go north, but
we don't really know
what they're going to do. And because they seem to have been so successful at spending the winter, and many of them, in fact, when you go on this Project Snow, the snowstorm thing, and look at these owls. A lot of them take off. They're owls, and they're able to hunt in the dark. Mm-hmm. A lot of them wait till it's dark, and they take off and they start hunting over marshes. Actually, they go out over the ocean or bays. Mm-hmm. They get going pretty fast right on the water level. And, you know, there's sleeping ducks. There's owls. And basically, they're sitting ducks for these owls.
Eesh.
They're not used to some big white bird coming, wham.
Yeah.
So they seem to be doing really well in terms of surviving the winter.
Right,
I've actually had three dead ones brought to me this year that had starved. But it seemed that perhaps they didn't die. They had something else wrong with them.
Right.
Like an infestation of worms or something that caused them to, in fact, be sick and then starve.
All right. If you have questions about snowy owls or a snowy owl story or another bird story or question, give us a call. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with ornithologist Vernon Locks. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, so Vern, you're talking about the snowy owls and the ospreys not getting along. And as beautiful as these snowy owls are, I'm not going to be happy if they start taking down ospreys. I mean, ospreys are a big bird. They can actually take them down?
Yeah, yes, I don't know that interaction has ever been seen before, because snowy owls are typically not here when ospreys are here. So, but I know owls instinctively hate ospreys and eagles, and ospreys return the favor. Hmm. In fact, if you're trying to band an osprey to catch it or put a transmitter on it at one of the nests, the older ones are really smart, and they're not going to come in. They can see the nets. But if you bring like either a stuffed great horned owl or a live owl, the birds just go absolutely, you know, they lose their mind, and they'll come right down and fly right into a mist net and get trapped because their instinctual hatred and defense of their nest site is so powerful that they will do that. So, yeah, I expect we might have some problems between ospreys and snowy owls in a couple of weeks, which if anyone's listening to this and sees that, that would certainly be worth documenting, photographing, making note of, because as far as I'm aware of, that is behavior that has never been seen before.
All right, we've got to keep our eyes open for that. Len is giving us a call from Provincetown. Good morning, Len.
Good morning. Quick question.
Good morning.
My bird feeder is being besieged by squirrels. Any suggestions?
Oh, those nasty squirrels.
Yeah.
It's a problem we all have.
Okay.
Yeah, those squirrels are unbelievable what
they
can
so
do.
They're so smart. Yeah, so
yeah, I mean, they have, you know, there are feeders that are squirrel-proof and that twirl and or give them an electric zap when they, but it's really hard. I don't know what to tell you except you know better than I do, Mindy.
I would say, you know, I was greasing my pole of my bird feeder, but you got to be careful what you grease it with, right, Vern? Because that's what Vern said. You don't want to use anything that's bad for the birds. So I was using actually Crisco, you know, and you have to go out and do it every once in a while. It's kind of messy, but the squirrels do slip off, you know.
I was recommending extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah,
it's too expensive.
I've used olive oil too. But, you know, the other thing too, Vern, we should probably talk about is some people say that you should use some of those red pepper flakes and things, but you don't recommend that.
No, red pepper does seem to, the squirrels don't eat it and the birds don't mind, but somehow, because squirrels can climb almost anything, they jump onto stuff. I mean, to make a bird feeder squirrel proof that they can't get on it is is something you should strive to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, they only like certain types of seed. They like sunflower seeds, they like peanuts. I guess they'll eat safflower, but they don't eat a bunch of
corn. They won't eat thistle.
Too. No, they don't eat thistle. It's good practice. If you figure out how to squirrel-proof a feeder, then the next trick is to build some screech owl boxes and mount them so that a squirrel can't get into them. Because if a squirrel can get in the box, then an owl probably won't use it.
Yeah.
So it's
Len, good luck.
Anyway, that's a big, you know, there's any of the bird feed stores, you can go online and there's, you know, there's probably 100 pages on how to try to make things squirrel-proof.
Yeah, and then a lot of them don't work.
Len, no,
thanks,
I know.
Thanks for the call. Ned is calling from West Barnstable. Hi, Ned.
Hi there.
Morning.
Last Wednesday at Bridge Creek in West Barnstable, there was an osprey, a mature one.
What?
Yes, I couldn't believe it. And he was flying around where they have the pole in the nest, but I haven't seen him since.
Wow. You didn't take a picture, did you?
Not at 30 miles an hour.
Yeah,
that's not recommended.
Yeah. Oh, well,
so, Ned, where did you say you saw that?
You have to screech to a halt and point it out to passing motorists.
Where did you see that, Ned?
Bridge Creek, which is just heading on 6A towards 132.
All right, we'll have to keep our eye on that. All right, Ned.
I had someone call me early this morning to say they thought they had an osprey on an osprey pole, and they got their binoculars out, and it was a snowy owl on the pole.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Ned, thanks for the phone call. Thanks for that. Lori is calling from Westport. Hi, Lori.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I was thinking about the number of robins I've been seeing this winter.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have like 100 in the yard, and I have not seen that before. I was wondering why there's so many robins this year.
And you're in Westport. You're in the stronghold of ospreys and great horned owl fighting in southeastern Mass. Yeah, it's been a great winter for robins, and you must have a great yard with a lot of trees and shrubs and things that have different berries. Do you have red cedars in your yard?
Yes, there's it's 22 acres, there's many fields, there's a lot of berries, yes.
And that's what these robins, the robins that are spending the winter there eating these berries are actually going to leave in probably less than 3 weeks to a month from now. And these birds they breed, these birds breed up in Labrador, Newfoundland, and actually some of them even in Quebec. They probably nest above tree line. So they come south to, well, this for them, this is Florida, and your yard has provided a bountiful amount of food for them this winter. So maybe something happened on your property that had more berries this year than usual, and the robins will be there until they exhaust all, they eat all the food, and then they'll move on.
Yeah, and so that, it's, and then our robins come back. Yeah, right. So we'll have our returning
by
robins.
Mid-April. The nest, by actually within the end of the month, we'll have the our robins that are spending the winter in the Carolinas and the Gulf Coast will come back north, and they'll start setting up territories and singing. And these other robins will move north rather quickly.
Yeah, Lori, have you noticed some of those robins look really big, like big fat?
They're huge.
Ones? Yeah,
they're very big. They gather in big groups. I mean, literally about 100 of them in the field next to my driveway.
Yeah, Fern, tell us why they're so big.
Yeah, that's great that she's noticing this. The robins, birds that have a big range, the birds that live in the furthest north, are the largest. There's a bunch of biological rules for this, but it actually enables them to stay warmer. So the robins that breed up in Labrador and Newfoundland are bigger than the robins that nest here. I mean, they literally, their measurements, they're bigger, they're heavier. And actually, they're also redder. They have darker pigmentation. They actually, if you see them side by side, they're different races. You can actually really see the difference. Like, wow, how come that robin's so big and colorful? And this one's so.
And then
so there's a lot of variation. There's races of robins.
Right. And there's also
just like all birds.
They can also puff up their feathers to look bigger when it's cold.
Well, that's the colder it is, the more air, the more they fluff their feathers up to trap insulating air in between their feathers. So, right, the colder it gets, the bigger they will puff themselves up, which in turn helps keep them warm.
Yeah. Lori, thanks for the call. Jan is calling from Orleans. Hi, Jan.
Hey there.
Good morning.
I'm sorry to say I haven't seen a snowy owl yet. I certainly hope to see one. But I do have an interesting sighting to report and a question. And that is, on my commute, I often stop at Marconi to go walk out on that path and look for whales. Didn't see any whales last week, but as I was coming back down the path to the parking lot, there was a gorgeous ring-necked pheasant strutting around the parking lot. And I have never seen a pheasant on the Cape, so that was quite a thrill. And he was just beautiful. And then he just walked down the walking path just as proud as you please. My question is, though, how do they protect themselves from predators? Do they roost in trees at night like wild turkeys?
No, pheasants generally roost on the ground. And of course, the pheasants that we have here are native birds. They belong in Asia. They're like an Indian species. They back in the 1800s, they were brought over to North America because people like to hunt them and eat them. But sadly, all the ringneck pheasants in Massachusetts, even anywhere in the Northeast, are all birds. There's very few. Occasionally, they will nest, but they're basically farm-raised birds that are released for hunters. And they're not very, I hate to say it, but they're not very smart. And most of them do get taken out by predators. Hmm. Red-tailed hawks learn they're good to eat. Of course, foxes, coyotes, raccoons. It is unusual to see, you see a lot of them in October, right after they stalk them. And then by this time of the year, they're down to a few. And it's just not ideal. They're not native species, and these birds were raised basically in a game farm, so they don't even know how to survive. I'm really not liking the pheasant thing at all.
Yeah.
It goes on.
Hey, Jen, another thing that was in the article in the Cape Cod Times today, there's actually a snowy owl walk today. Today and March 11th, and that's if you call over the Harwich Conservation Trust, you can get in on that if you'd like to do that. And then the whales, if you go to Provincetown Center for Coastal Studies Facebook page, I think sometimes they have it on their website, they'll tell you where the whales are being seen. So
great.
Jen, thanks for the call. John called from Wareham, Vern, to say he saw a bald eagle in Wareham.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah?
There should be, there's actually quite a number of eagles around. And this, despite this cold weather, the colder it gets, and the longer the freeze holds and weaker waterfowl get, the more eagles show up. In fact, the best time to see bald eagles is like in a vicious cold front in February. Hmm. If things, the more things ice up, the more eagles there are around.
But they don't nest here, do they?
They almost nest on Cape. They nest in Lakeville, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. which I believe is in the listening area.
Yeah.
I've been predicting for a while now that they will nest soon on some of the big ponds, one or more on the Cape.
Hmm.
Mashpee Wakeby Pond has had bald eagles pretty much, for 8 or 10 months of the year. Some of the big ponds in Brewster. It's a bird that's doing very well. Their numbers are increasing, and it would not surprise me at all to have bald eagles nesting on Cape Cod sometime in the near future.
That'd be exciting. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Janet is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Janet.
Hi. Morning. I'd like to report a snowy owl sighting in Falmouth on the bike path. And saw a beautiful snowy perched on the roof line, the ridge line of one of those big houses that are on Fay Road, looking out over Vineyard Sound.
Hmm.
And was this this morning?
That was a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
great.
I know it's old. Sorry, but he was a beautiful snowy owl, and we got up close, as close as we could without trespassing on the property, and it was definitely a snowy. What a
wow.
snow!
Could you see the bird's back?
No.
I'm wondering if it isn't the bird that flew down. I'm wondering if it might have had a transmitter on it. It's hard to see. It's just a little. It's like a 3-inch little bat, a pack that's velcroed onto its back with a little tiny antenna.
Oh.
Anyway, that's something to look for when you're looking at these owls, because you might see one of the birds that is helping us do research.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
Janet.
Yeah.
Well, I've also seen a lot of flickers this year.
Oh.
At my bird feeders.
Yeah. They're beautiful. And yeah.
They are. What are they eating?
One is at the suet feeder as I'm speaking. and then we have a feeder of mixed seeds and fruits, dried fruits. One of the
And are you aware of how to tell the males from the females? The males have a little black, what they call a mustachial stripe. It's not a mustache, but he has a black mark that comes from basically with a gape, the base of their beak, sort of down towards their chest a little bit, a nice black, like Zorro type thing.
Gotcha.
And the females don't.
It was a male at the suet feeder just now, then.
Excellent.
All right.
All right.
That's good. Thanks. You just learned something.
Yeah,
great.
I sure did.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot. Yep. Bye-bye.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Cynthia is calling from Osterville. Hello, Cynthia.
Yes. Good morning. There was a caller that asked about squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
And for, coyotes, everything. I don't know if anybody has heard about this gross sounding, the P-Mart, P-E-E Mart out of Maine. And I use the mountain lion urine, and there's also a wolf urine to keep away coyotes. And they list all of the predators, and squirrels are among them. I've forgotten just what they have for squirrels because I've tried to use these two. But that's also a thought around your property.
Does it work?
Interesting. And so it's the P-Mart, P-E-E Mart, and it's the urine.
Yeah, but Cynthia, does it work? I mean, have you said you've tried it? It works?
I think it does. Man, I have two little pugs. I don't want a coyote getting them. And now I wonder about these fisher cats that I just heard about.
Yeah.
But, they've got one down for squirrels, too. And I can't recall offhand just what it is. But, I think any of these cat urines would work against squirrels.
Yeah.
So
Can you smell the stuff yourself?
Oh, it's gross, yes.
Okay.
Either have a spray or the liquid, and then they give sort of a little, I'm trying to think, you can buy these little hanging, it's a fibrous kind of material that you put on the tree limbs, or otherwise what you do when you're first using it around your property, I think you spray it every 10 or 30 feet, I've forgotten, and then you have to, you either spray that little tab that you put on a tree, or you could, you know, you could do cotton balls or something. They have a variety of ways that you could do it. Or otherwise, I think you treat it every week for a while until the scent gets into the ground.
Oh my. So you don't, every time it rains, you don't have to redo it, I would think?
No, like, I put it down underneath rhododendrons. I try to put it in a protected area, but, I mean, if you take these little tabs and you hang them, you know, on a tree branch or something that's sort of protected and around your property, that scent will, for instance, keep away the coyotes. I mean, after I've seen them on this dirt lane, I don't want them near me. And so,
well, that's interesting. Well,
that's
amazing, Cynthia, thanks. Thanks for that tip. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeendislands.org. David is calling from Nantucket. Hi, David.
Hey, good morning. How are you both?
Great.
Good.
Fantastic. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment on the caller that was having concerns about how to keep squirrels away from his feeder.
Okay.
Probably about 10 years ago, I worked at a bird store up in upstate New York, and, of course, that was the perpetual question. Mm-hmm. And any number of solutions were offered, and the best one that I ever came across was to use basically a straight metal pole, probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 feet tall, that gets sunk down into the ground, and then halfway up, you have a squirrel baffle, which was basically a round piece of stovepipe, probably about 2 feet long, with a metal lid on top, and it's just suspended right on the pole. And then on the top, you would use a flange plate and use some type of a hopper feeder. And as long as that feeder was more than 8 feet away from anything the squirrel could jump from, that was like the greatest solution.
Yeah.
We had one person that ever came back and said they saw a squirrel get a running start, jump onto the bottom of the pole, jump around the baffle, and get up to the feeder.
Wow.
So that's the best one that I've ever come across.
Yeah, that sounds,
and there,
sounds
and
good.
There you have it. That's great. We should have those instructions written down somewhere.
Right.
It's like, okay, this is what you do.
It is kind of fun to watch the squirrels try to get through some of these squirrel-proof things.
It really is. I think the bottom line that we came up with was as long as the feeder was more than 5 feet off the ground and more than 8 feet away from anything they can jump from, that was pretty much the limit that would keep them from being able to.
Great.
Wow.
Oh, David, thanks for that.
Sure. And just one last quick comment. I did see a snowy owl 2 days ago out at Low Beach Road.
Nice.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, David. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. It's Bird News with ornithologist Vernon Locks. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with ornithologist Vernon Locks. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeendislands.org. Rich is calling from Chatham. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Mindy. I just want to report to you and Vern that I guess about 2 weeks ago, I saw a mature bald eagle and an immature bald eagle on the pond behind my house.
Ooh.
This is Emery Pond in Chatham.
Wow.
There
nice.
Were some ducks.
So an immature and a mature, wow.
Yeah, the mature was in the morning, and the immature was in the afternoon. But it looked like it was a bad day for the ducks.
Uh-oh.
They were mallards, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, did you actually see the eagles get a duck?
I didn't see them get a duck. I was woken up by the crows who were making a real fuss. So
they weren't enjoying the eagle, I'm sure.
Yeah, they were surrounding him. It looked like, you know, the wagon train surrounded by the Indians or something. But the eagle was nonplussed about the whole thing, and he just continued eating.
Wow.
And then I had to go out, and I came back in the afternoon, and there was an immature eagle. I don't know if he was eating the same duck or a different duck.
Oh, boy.
Great.
It's the first time I'd seen eagles on the Cape.
Wow. All right, Rich, thanks for that. So we got the eagles going for the ducks and the snowy owls. Those poor ducks, like you said, Vern, they're sitting ducks.
That's right. They are sitting ducks
this winter. You know, before I go to the next call, long-tailed ducks have come back, you said?
Yes, the mystery of the long-tailed ducks that stage this very impressive daily movement from Nantucket Sound. And they fly generally around the west end of Nantucket at Mattaquette, and then they go offshore and feed about 30 to 50 miles south, and they fly back in the late afternoon. They used to start showing up in early November, and they would be very reliable, and you'd see these huge flights of birds, sometimes a half a million, as much as 300, three quarters of a million birds. They would darken the sky. Well, they stopped. Basically, for the last 2 years, it's like it stopped. And we didn't know, really figure out what's going on with this. And all of a sudden, in the last 2 weeks, and normally this would end by early March, all of a sudden we're seeing large numbers of... The other night I was with somebody and we saw probably 300,000 wow. long-tailed ducks coming in late afternoon, before dark, coming in offshore. So, you know, I don't know, something has changed with their food or their feeding patterns, but the ducks are not gone. They're still here. We just don't see them as reliably as we used to. But it's really exciting. There's no place else in the world that has this kind of concentration of these birds.
Yeah, it's
and,
worth it.
Mindy got to see it a few years ago when it was really
fabulous.
Rocking. And it's unforgettable.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk to Rosalind, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Rosalind.
Hi. I've got two comments or questions. I saw a pair of cardinals, and he was feeding her a seed. And I was wondering, is they already courting this time?
That's exactly what's going on, yeah. I was surprised this morning, it's 21 degrees, to see cardinals perched up about every quarter of a mile on the telephone wires here singing. The males, even though the temperature's bad, they're responding. The days are getting longer, the photo period, and their endocrines are, you know, their hormones are kicking in, and they're starting to, the reason they sing is to announce their presence and to maintain a territory and attract a mate, and you're already watching them courting. That's exactly what's going on. It's kind of great. I just can't wait till the weather warms up.
No, none of us can.
We're all ready for that, that's for sure.
I there was just another question. I don't know whether I've got the wrong bird or not. It looked like a Carolina wren, but the breast was completely red, just like a robin, and it was around for a couple of days. And was it a wren or was it something else?
I've never even heard of a Carolina wren as you describe, but perhaps you had a melanistic or a genetically challenged or altered Carolina wren. The only way really we could solve it would be if you could get some sort of a digital image of it.
And
you know, a picture in this instance is worth a million words. I can't say for sure what you saw.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it may, you know what Carolina wrens look like, and you know, if it was a Carolina wren, sometimes there's, you know, there's melanistic ones that are totally black, and some birds are albinistic and leucistic, and there's all sorts of genetic things that can happen that will change the colors of a bird, but their shape and their bill size and everything else doesn't change. So,
Rosalind, thanks.
I can't answer that, but it sounds fascinating.
Yeah. If it comes back, get a picture.
Yeah, I keep watching for them, but I haven't seen them.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Rosalind. Bridget is calling from Sandwich. Hi, Bridget.
Hello. I'm just curious. I absolutely love bluebirds, and I'm here in Sandwich, and I used to see them 2, 3, even 4 years ago. I'd see them in groups coming through, and now I haven't seen them in years.
And what has changed around where you live?
Nothing that I know of. I used to take walks through the golf course, the Holly Ridge Golf Course, and I would see them in groups, you know, 15, 20 of them in a group. And then in our backyard, I have one tree that has these little black berries on it, and they loved that. They would just completely attack that. And now we haven't seen them.
Hmm. And does the tree still have the berries?
It does.
Yeah, that's odd. Yeah, no, Holly Ridge, anywhere, there's lots of roving flocks of bluebirds in that part of Cape Cod. They love, as you say, Holly Ridge, one of their favorite foods. In fact, their absolute favorite berry, which is what they survive the winter on, is the American holly. They love holly berries. But, I know there's quite a lot around. They were seen on most of the bird counts, and I get reports almost daily from people that have them coming into their bird baths or in their yards. So I don't know what's happened to you. I think your birds, maybe it's just you've been unlucky recently. But they are the most incredible.
They're beautiful.
Seeing them is just, you know, it's exhilarating. Just how can they be that blue, you know?
They're so pretty.
Every time bluebirds, they take your breath away. They're so pretty.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So is there a time of year I should look more than another?
Well, have you had them nesting there? Have you tried putting out bird houses, nest boxes?
No.
Well, I would recommend instead of just one nest box too. There's tree swallows, bluebirds, white-breasted nuthatches, tufted titmice, black-capped chickadees will all use the same nest box with an inch and a half hole. But there's a lot of competition for those. So instead of just putting up one, I would recommend you put up four or six birdhouses and then or nest boxes, and then a blue. You'd be amazed that you might get a bluebird come into your yard and nest.
Yeah, okay.
It's worth a try.
Yeah, Bridget, thanks for the call. Yeah,
have your husband make them for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Silvern, obviously, osprey's arriving, says spring, but so do the woodcocks when they start doing their little courting dance. And somebody actually sent us a little video of a woodcock dancing around.
That was a very impressive video. I was envious and jealous. I have never had woodcock that close to me doing that, especially in the daytime.
Yeah,
that's because they're nocturnal birds, and so whatever they saw, that was really great. Is that on the website somewhere?
We'll put it up there if it's not.
Yeah, because that's cool. And American woodcock, if listeners are not familiar with them, I would recommend taking a look in a field guide or go online and look these things up. And it's a shorebird that lives. It's a woodland loving nocturnal shorebird that has got. They're just the most amazing looking birds you could ever even think of.
Yeah,
couldn't design a bird that looks like it belongs on Mars and not here. more than a woodcock, and I just love them. I love their noises. I love their cryptic coloration. They have these really long beaks that it turns out I've been lucky enough to handle some woodcocks, and they're the outer third of their bill is like rubber, and it's flexible. So at night, these things use their bill as a probe, and they stick it down into the dirt, and then they can move it around, and they can sense the earthworms somehow. Mm. It's quite amazing. They probably are able to detect electrical impulses. It's a much more complex system than we really have any idea. So
yeah.
Anyway,
they have a great woodcock sound. I don't know if we have the bird sound of a woodcock, but maybe Dan can check that out and see if we have that.
I'll bet he'll find it between now
but they
and
have,
sometime.
And yeah, they have. They do make a and they talk about the dance. They go up in the air and they do this crazy kind of a courting
dance.
Well,
I'd like you to describe it because I've taken you out to see this.
Yeah,
but not for a few years now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how to do
it.
They fly
you
up in the air. Oh yeah, they go up in the air and then they kind of twirl down. What are they doing?
Well, the males, we think it's the males. We don't even know for sure. But the males display, they do this courtship, but they wait just as it's getting dark. In fact, they're really hard to see because they do wait until it's very dark. The male will fly out. They spend the day in leaf litter and under trees and stuff. And then just as it gets dark, woodcock have funny wings that are rounded. And they actually make quite a lot of noise with their wingtips. They have stiffened feathers that they use in these courtship flights that cause them to make noise when they fly and take off. You can hear them twittering along. They come out and they land in a grassy field, and then the male starts going, bang, bang, bang.
There, there it is.
That's cool. It's better than I do it. Okay, and there. Yep. Okay, now he stopped. He's flying now. Yeah. And you can hear the wings going. It's actually going up in this long ascending. It goes in a big spiral, climbing higher and higher and higher, until it reaches a point known only to it. It's way out of sight at this point in the dark, even on a beautiful moonlit night. And then it comes twisting. It does basically a controlled side slip. They come down. making this very high twittering noise that is actually not being produced by its syrinx, but it's made by these special feathers on the end of its wings, and it comes ripping down, poof, and then there's silence, and then bang, then they start doing it again. Yeah. And it is just,
it's great
a
to
fabulous
see it, yeah.
show, and if you haven't seen it, the end of March, actually the next warm night when it's not very windy, I think woodcock are going to go crazy displaying, because this cold weather has sort of delayed the onset of a lot of things.
Yeah. So we have lots of activity once it starts warming up.
I expect, and normally spring isn't that big a deal on the Cape and Islands. It's kind of slow, but because of this extraordinarily cold and late in the season, as we're talking right now, I'm watching a male northern harrier out the window starting to do a little display flight on Nantucket. Mm. So that tells me spring is here.
Yay. All right. Let's talk to Lisa, who's giving us a call from Yarmouthport. Hi, Lisa.
Hey there. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Good. Hey, nice to talk to you, Mindy, Vern. I had a question for you, Vern. I live on Fallen Pond in Yarmouthport, and we've been seeing lots of ducks when the pond is not frozen, widgeons, scups, buffleheads, mergansers, and tons of mallards. And there have been days when there's been about 80 to 100 mallards. And usually, you know, they're just floating around, or if there is ice, they're warming themselves on the ice. But I wanted to ask you about this. Lately, I've been seeing them flying in, in a flock, just beyond the pond, over the houses and trees, just on the shore, like going around and around, like maybe you'd see a flock of, starlings or blackbirds or something like that. So I thought it was really weird because I didn't think they were going to go in the trees, and it took them forever before they finally decided, oh, I'm going to land on the pond. So I didn't know if you had any ideas about why the ducks...
Were you able to actually look at the ducks and the makeup of the sexes of that group?
I did look with the binoculars. I was pretty sure they were mallards, and they were mixed. It was male and female.
They were, huh. Because this time of year, the females actually select the mate. And often I've been watching out here, I've been watching long-tailed ducks, eiders, common golden eyes. And often six, eight, ten males will be chasing or going after a female and trying to impress her until the female picks one. So I don't know what's going on with the mallards, but something is.
Well, huh. I'll have to take a closer look next time, and I'll update you if I get any more information.
Great.
Oh, great.
Right. Lisa, thanks for that. And she mentioned blackbirds. We're seeing a lot of blackbirds, too.
Red-winged blackbirds are back, and they're singing. Well, actually, they're singing around here all day long now, even in this really cold. There have been a few common grackles I've heard about and a couple of brown-headed cowbirds, which I go boo because I don't like the brood parasites.
Yep. Yep.
They lay their eggs in other birds' nests, so I'm not real fond of them. But
yeah, and then those little baby cowbirds kill the other ones, right? They take over.
Yeah, that's when you're a brood parasite, they learn all sorts of tricks, but it's really bad news for the other birds that they lay their eggs in, the nest. They don't raise any young.
Yeah, earlier we were talking about the cardinals singing, and it's so nice, even, it's so cold, and when you walk out the door in the morning to start to hear the bird song pick up, it's such a nice sound. it's like spring is coming.
Yes, it is. And you know what, Mindy? I'd like to mention that you're actually coming to Nantucket this weekend to do a couple of things.
Yes, we're going to be there for the Quiz Bowl, which is I'm very excited about. So we'll be there Saturday.
And that's Saturday night at 6 at the Whaling Museum.
At the Whaling Museum. And Sunday we've got our Edward Gorey screening at Dreamland. And again, it's going to be a great weekend.
And you might have to do a little birding.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm hoping. I want to see the long-tailed ducks again.
Yeah. Well, we'll give it a shot.
Yeah. So, and again, for folks who want to check the long-tailed ducks, in the morning and then at night, right? So sort of early.
So far, we have not been seeing it at all in the morning. Of course, they probably leave really, really early. Right. I've tried maybe a half a dozen times and not seen any, but it's been pretty good in the afternoons, particularly it seems the windier it is from the west, the more long-tailed ducks you see. So like tonight, it looks like the wind is going to stay down and be very nice. I don't have any idea what's going to happen with the flight tonight, but we'll take a look.
You'll check it out. All right. Yeah. Vernon Locks is the senior naturalist at the Linda Loring Nature Foundation on Nantucket, which is where he joined us from this morning. Thank you, Vern.
Thank you, Mindy.
See you this weekend.
All right.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.